From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Annette John Hall.
And I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov.
Shai, have you ever lived with a roommate?
I have lived with roommates. In college, I lived in a house in the town where my college was with four random guys. I actually lived in the dining room. That was my room.
You lived in the dining room?
Yeah, we just had too many guys and I lived
in
the dining
room. And not enough bedroom.
That's right. I had a chandelier in my room. It was a little weird. Well, did you know that a lot of those kinds of living situations would be considered illegal in Philadelphia?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, a lot of places like this actually fly under the radar, so we don't know exactly how many are out there. But Philadelphia thinks there could be thousands of illegal rooming houses. Some people are pushing to make these places legal, saying it actually would make it safer for residents if these places would be inspected, if they had fire escapes and smoke detectors. But others push back, worrying that these houses, which are basically chopped up into, just rooms that single rooms that people rent, could negatively impact their property values. And this really came to a head last year. A deadly house fire in an illegal rooming house last March that really brought the debate to a boil and had city officials calling for reform. But a year later, nothing has changed.
So why can't officials decide on the best way to deal with illegal rooming houses?
Today on The Why, Room to Disagree.
Jake Boomgart is a reporter for WHYY's Plan Philly.
So, Jake, tell us about the house fire on the 1800 block of North 21st Street that happened around this time last year.
Days after a deadly fire inside this North 21st Street building, a memorial lingers outside.
So it was a really horrific situation. The fire broke out, and Alita Johnson was living on the third floor with her dad, Horace, and her young son, Hashim, and she calls the fire department. They get there. There are people out front of the house who tell them that the family that lives on the third floor, they think they may have moved out. They haven't seen them in months. The firefighters try to get up to the third floor, but the stairs collapse.
There was no access from the second floor to the third floor.
And given that the other residents of the house told them that there probably wasn't anybody up there, they decided that they didn't need to try to get up there again. So then what happened is Alita Johnson's family members were calling her cell phone, calling her dad's cell phone, and they weren't answering. And they got really scared and, really kept pressuring the fire department to go back. And sure enough, they did days later.
Family members say after nonstop calls to the Philadelphia Fire Department, their three loved ones were found in that second search, hugging each other in a bathtub.
And found the three bodies in the bathroom on the third floor. Fire Commissioner Adam Thiel told reporters last year that part of the reason they missed the family is because the house was zoned as a single-family use.
This building, of course, was zoned and expected to be a single-family dwelling where you would expect the family unit that lives there to be able to report the whereabouts.
Even though it turned out it had been carved into up to six-room apartments.
So what do we mean when we say an illegal rooming house?
So rooming houses are not strictly defined under the zoning code, but really what we're talking about is kind of properties where individual rooms are rented out and bathrooms are shared by the various tenants who are not related, probably don't know each other. And then also in some cases they, share a fridge and a stove and all that kind of stuff. But mostly they're largely illegal because under Philadelphia's zoning code, it is very hard to rent out single rooms.
So why would someone want to live in an illegal rooming house?
Maybe they had been evicted a lot and they have that on their rental record, which would make a more traditional landlord hesitant to rent to them. Maybe it was someone who recently got out of prison. Let's say you have really bad credit. A lot of traditional landlords aren't going to like rent you an apartment. So it was just much more accessible.
I've been here for about five years.
One rooming house tenant I met who stayed in a legally operated rooming house in North Philadelphia.
My name is James Smith Jr. You know, I'm a retired entertainer.
He was in a prominent Philly R&B group back in the 70s, the Stylistics. You know, he had owned a house with his wife in Germantown.
My wife had passed on, and I gave my children the house because I didn't want to no longer live there and live around my kids either.
And this rooming house charges about $80 a week. And he's been living there ever since.
Wow.
He told me there were several things he really liked about it. He grew up around in that part of North Philadelphia, so he's very familiar with it.
I go to church up the block. So all I have to do is go out the door. I'm on the bus.
There's just like a lot of stuff going on around there that is accessible to him as a man in his late 60s with a relatively limited income.
I'm at peace.
So, Jake, back in the day, rooming houses were standard living situations for a lot of Philadelphians, right?
Right, exactly.
I'm hearing some like ragtime music under this part.
I mean, for you know much of the 19th and early 20th centuries, rooming houses were kind of the cheap way for people, you know, often single people starting out in life, older people who are single, people who newly arrived in the country, people of limited means could rent a room. But kind of as the 20th century wore on and a lot of like zoning and building code regulations were put in place, it became increasingly hard to set up new rooming houses. But that didn't mean that the demand for these places went away. Instead, a lot of these rooming houses just started to operate under the radar.
That's WHYY's Jake Bloomgard. We're talking about illegal rooming houses. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov, and this is The Why. We'll be back after a quick break. You're listening to The Why, which means you like deep dives into local stories.
We can't do it without listeners like you.
Consider a monthly gift to WHYY of any amount you choose.
Support your public media station now by visiting whyy.org.
Thanks for your support.
So, Jake, are there a lot of illegal rooming houses in Philadelphia?
So last year, after the fire, Karen Gus, who's a press rep for the Department of Licenses and Inspections, told me that there are far more rooming houses in Philadelphia than the city is aware of.
In a city as poor as Philadelphia with an affordable housing shortage, it's really not surprising that we see boarding houses spring up all over the city, especially in North Philly. But I think people would be surprised to hear, to find out how many there really are.
And they're concentrated in the poorer areas of the city.
When we mapped the violations that were found by LNI in the last couple of years, they were massively concentrated in North Philadelphia, also with large concentrations in the Kensington area, parts of West Philadelphia. But also notably, there were no rooming house violations in Center City. There were none in Roxborough. There were none in the kind of higher income parts of the Northeast, like Fox Chase. So there definitely is a kind of geography of this that maps along a lot of the class and race divides within Philadelphia. The only place in the city where this doesn't map onto poverty is kind of around universities. And in many cases, nobody calls in violations in those areas.
So firefighters said the Johnsons died because they were living in an illegal rooming house. What was the reaction? Did people call for action right away?
Yeah, they absolutely did. City Council President Daryl Clark is the council member for that neighborhood, and he introduced legislation that passed that would require all rooming houses to have interconnected smoke alarms that are kind of very similar to what you might find in a, you know, fancy apartment building or condo building. But the effect of that is relatively limited. So data I got from LNI last year showed that there were only 82 legal rooming houses that have been approved in the last 12 years.
Wow, in the whole city?
In the whole
city. And some of them may not be operating.
Right, and some of them may not be operating anymore. And again, put that in the context of we're getting of the city getting 500 complaints about illegal rooming houses every year. And again, LNI thinks there are probably thousands of these things out there. But the other thing that happened is Dave Perry, who's the commissioner for the Department of Licenses and Inspections, kind of came out with a proposal to basically legalize rooming houses and to make it easier to establish rooming houses in residential parts of the city.
So we have an affordable housing crisis, but yet we have a prohibition against establishing the most inexpensive form of housing in the areas where they're needed the most.
His argument was basically that it will be much easier for his department to regulate these spaces if they know where more of them are.
So, Jake, has there been any pushback?
There is, just generally speaking, pushback against rooming houses in a lot of the neighborhoods of Philadelphia. I was speaking with Joyce Smith, who's an organizer and a neighborhood leader in East Parkside.
People need a place to live. We get that. But these rooming houses, we suspect when you just look at them that they are not... They're substandard.
In her neighborhood, which has all these huge Victorian houses, but also has a very low median income and a high poverty rate, there are just a lot of rooming houses. They did an informal kind of survey and found that on some blocks, it was like 25 to like 30 or 40% of the houses on a block were rooming houses.
Mm. If you have a small neighborhood like East Parkside, and we have a neighborhood that's saturated, you know, it affects the housing market and all the quality of the kind of quality of life in the neighborhood.
Yeah, I think initially there will be resistance because there's kind of a stigma around rooming houses.
But last year, Dave Perry said, look, these rooming houses are already here and most of them are just operating under the radar. And it's impossible for his inspectors to get into them.
I think we need to start a dialogue. So if it's out there and there's a demand for it, it behooves us to figure out a way of properly regulating it.
So ultimately, at the root of this problem is that we don't have enough affordable housing for people. Is this just one more argument for kind of pushing to increase the amount of affordable housing in the city?
So it is, although, you know, it kind of comes down to what we mean when we talk about affordable housing. The federal government's subsidies for affordable housing have been shrinking for decades. So what some advocates want, and like kind of what Dave Perry was talking about in like legalizing rooming houses, would be legalizing a kind of unsubsidized form of affordable housing, changing these regulations that are under Philadelphia's control to allow kind of market rate affordable housing.
Do you see that happening?
No, I don't. And the reason for that is that homeowner groups are often, you know, made very nervous by rooming houses because in a lot of these cases, these homeowners, their homes are their principal asset and they are therefore nervous about the kind of trajectory of their neighborhoods and they're very defensive of what they see as the neighborhood character. And then they also tend to have the ear of their council people. They are the people who vote in local elections. And I also don't want this to sound like this is kind of like some kind of a snobby thing. Like their concerns are real. It's a real question of kind of like how to balance the needs of these groups of people. Because in many cases, these are not like super wealthy homeowners or something. These are like working class, lower middle class folks who are just trying to preserve what they have.
Thank you, Jake.
Thanks, Jake.
No problem.
The Y is produced by me, Annette John Hall, along with Shai Binyakov and Alex Stern, with editorial direction from Katie Colinari. We had editing help on this episode from Ariella Cohen.
Thanks to our interns Xavier Lopez and Julian Harris.
Our engineers are Mike Villers, Al Banks, Adam Stanishevsky, Diana Martinez, and Charlie Kyer.
Our news director is Eugene San.
John Musoni is Assistant Vice President of News Operations.
And Sandra Clark is Vice President of News and Civic Dialogue. Our theme music was composed by Ish Quintero. Tweet us at Shai Benyakov and at AnnetteJH.
We'll be back Monday.